You know, 10 months ago, we made a decision to redefine our direction. We knew there would be ups and downs this season. We knew that we would encounter some things that were going to be difficult, and we did. With that said, I think we're in a better place today than we were at this time last year. And I think we have an opportunity to grow as an organization starting today.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
Levine, he goes right. Oh!
Stop it, Sampson! Did you not get the memo?
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Here's oh! Enes Kanter, what are you doing? The finisher in New York City.
Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
We're going to preach patience. Doesn't mean we're not going to be looking for ways to get better, but a lot of it's going to come internally. We need Zach LaVine to be a better basketball player. Chris Dunn to come back a better player. Lauri Markkanen, Bobby Portis, you go down the line. They have to put in the time, and confident that they will.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Like I said at the beginning, I feel better today about our direction and our position than I did a year ago.
Locked On Bulls. Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and College Hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, host of Bulls Outsiders on NBC Sports Chicago and host of the 312 Show on AM 1590 WCGO. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Drop us a text or a voicemail at 331-979-1369. We'd love to hear from you. Drop us those voicemails. Maybe you got some thoughts about last night's game. That's last second shot by LaVine. We'd love to hear from you. 331-979-1369. Just off the top of the show, as we welcome you back again for another edition of Locked On Bulls, if you've been listening with us or following us on Twitter at all over the last few weeks, we did do a giveaway for Wendell Carter Jr. Jersey, and I don't think we made an announcement officially about who won that on the show, so we just wanted to mention really quick, we did give out our winner. Our winner is already accepted. His name is Will, so congrats to Will on winning our Wendell Carter Jr. jersey. So hopefully he enjoys that. And yeah, it's we'll have plenty of giveaways going across Locked On Bulls across the season. So this is not your only opportunity to win something. We've been doing giveaways since we started here at Locked On Bulls. So make sure to follow us on at Locked On Bulls on Twitter and keep up to date with us there, because we'll be doing giveaways all season long. But with that, Matt, what's going on? How are you doing?
Doing all right, Jordan. Fighting my way through a cold, which, you know, like clockwork, first snow of the season, all of a sudden, I just, you know, boom, there it is. But, yeah, as you said, congrats to Will. He's one of our super fans. He was one of the fans who showed up to do our Bowling with Bobby event earlier this fall, and it was really fun chatting with him at our event. And he, when I was chatting with him via DMs, telling him that he was our, he was the winner that we drew, he was over the moon excited. So hopefully he's happy to have Mark, have Wendell's jersey added to his Bulls collection. Because he mentioned to me he had already gotten a Markkanen jersey, Markkanen's rookie season. So now he's got the last two Bulls rookie lottery draft picks in his collection. And I'm honestly a little jealous. I think I need to get myself a Wendell Carter jersey.
I'm kind of jealous too. And I don't know if I'm going to go with a Markkanen or Carter jersey yet, but I definitely have to grab myself one of those too. So we've given away a lot here on Locked On Bulls over the last year. Anywhere from autographed pictures, which we just sent those out about a month ago. So all the listeners that won, we had three winners from that, already received their prizes for that. We've given away a Markkanen jersey last year. We've given away tickets to Bulls games, two Bulls games, Timberwolves last year, Golden State Warriors this year. Autographed pictures, you name it, we've probably given it away. So definitely keep tuned to us at Locked On Bulls on Twitter and here listening to the show. Okay, with that, Matt, last night's game wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. And we had a feeling, you know, in our Spurs preview yesterday, we kind of had a feeling with some of the injuries with the Spurs, and kind of the way that they have been playing recently, losing six of their last eight, sort of like the Bulls, that the Bulls might have a fighting chance in this one at home last night. So obviously, I think we should go to the elephant in the room, which is the last shot of the game. The one in which LaVine calls off Fred Hoiberg, opens it up pretty much for an isolation play, and then settles for a step back three in which it goes off the front of the rim. The Bulls lose by one. Initial thoughts on that shot, because I think people kind of already know my feeling about the shot.
Outside, waves everybody away. Here comes Wendell. Now he's waved away. Fred wanted to come up. LaVine said no. He turned it down. LaVine dancing. The rebound and a foul.
Now that's a terrible shot. Late game situation. Your best player on the floor.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't entirely a bad decision by LaVine. And, you know, first I'll say this. The fact that the Bulls were in that opportunity to win this game late is credit to them for being in this game and not really having a quarter that doomed them. We've been continuously talking after losses about how one of the four quarters the Bulls just get stomped on. Last night, they played evenly with a decent Spurs team through three and a half quarters, and then it was the back end of that fourth quarter. The Bulls only got 6 points in the final 6 minutes, and it was the two threes that Archie hit. But even still, they played solid enough and consistently enough through the first three quarters and change to be in a position to have a chance to win that game. When it comes to LaVine, I'm fine with him waving off the Wendell screen, because we've seen many times already when they're trying to do that two-man game, the opposing team just doubles up on LaVine because nobody respects Wendell as an offensive threat yet. So Zach didn't want to get himself into that situation. That's fine. To disregard Fred Hoiberg saying, all right, Wendell, go set a screen, and Zach saying, I don't want the screen, that's fine. But I'm sorry, DeRozan is an average defender. I don't think he's a great defender. And clearly, LaVine could get past most anybody off the dribble in the NBA. We saw him attack the basket many times earlier in this game. Taking a long pull-up three there, instead of knowing that you're only down one, and that if you drive to the basket, make the refs call that foul if you draw contact, get to the line for two easy free throws, or blow by everybody, dunk it in, lay it in, whatever. It was not a great finish to a game in which was the latest of many where LaVine has a chance to win for the Bulls and he doesn't get it done.
Totally with you on the fact that you think, you know, waving off Fred Hoiberg, fine. I was totally fine with that too. LaVine wants to take the last shot. Great. Fine. Do that. But from a basketball standpoint, and let's just put this out of the way for a second, because there's a lot of fans reacting to it on Twitter last night. It's like, oh, it's a great tank win. At least they didn't pull out this win. This is a win you don't need. Okay, fine. Put that out of the way for a second. Let's talk about the actual basketball and put ourselves in the shoes of the players and the coaches on the floor there. From a basketball standpoint, and Zach LaVine has to know this too, you're the guy that's out there preaching we need to learn how to win. That wasn't a learn how to win type of shot. Like, I don't understand that call with that much time left on the clock. If you're not going to call a timeout there, which I'm totally fine with, you're going to call off Fred Hoiberg, you're going to call off all the screens given to you, and you take a step back three against DeMar DeRozan, who arguably is one of the better guarding defenders in the NBA. I don't understand that shot. Add that to the fact that LaVine is shooting 22.7% from three in the month of November. He won a game against Charlotte back in October by driving to the basket on a screen set by Jabari Parker. So those little things, add all of that up. LaVine's got to be a better player than that. If you're going to be the all-star and the superstar that we want you to be, and that number one alpha, you've got to be smarter in that situation and not take a step back three, but yet drive to the basket. Two options can happen there. You drill the shot, you're up one, and the clock is basically about to expire, or you draw the foul. And you win the game that way. Like, so to me, the three was unnecessary, and there was people chirping at me too saying, oh, it was a fine shot. He got a good look at it. No, he didn't get a good look at it. A contested three at the top of the key is not a good look when you have 15 seconds left. Like that's not a good shot. So to me, preaching learning how to win and then taking that shot is kind of contradictory to me. I don't know about you, man.
Yeah, well, and LaVine said in his post-game comments, he was fine with the look he got and the shot he took, saying, I'm comfortable shooting. He had an okay shooting night, not great, 10 of 26. Before that shot, he was 3 of 7 from downtown. So he was hitting some threes last night. So, okay, fine. I'll accept begrudgingly his explanation there by saying, that's a shot that I like to take. Fine. But it wasn't the best shot. Turn down an okay shot for a good shot, right? That is, in essence, the heart of offense, like the crux of offensive basketball. Pass up a decent shot for a better shot. And LaVine didn't do that. And this was, I mentioned it, you mentioned it. It is the latest example of LaVine not getting it done in crunch time. At least he didn't just lose the ball, which was an ongoing trend already in late game clutch situations where the Bulls are, within 3 to 5 points, either holding a slim lead or trying to come from behind. And Zach is your primary ball handler because he's your best ball handler and your best threat to go win the game. And he just loses the ball, dribbles it off his knee. One time, I think it was that early game against the Pistons, he just went up for a shot and the ball just flew out of his hands. So at least this was an example of him actually getting a shot up as opposed to just losing the ball before he gets a chance to shoot. But we've already seen many of those too, where LaVine has a chance to win the game. And he is the hero ball guy that the Bulls have on this roster right now. And he doesn't hit the shot. It's not just a coincidence anymore. It's enough of a sample size. It's enough of a trend to say LaVine is not very clutch this season. And, the counterpoint is, okay, well, what's the better option? This Bulls team does not have a lot of great weapons. Who do you want taking that shot other than LaVine? And the answer is really nobody. But come on, can Fred Hoiberg not draw up a play? Like, if you want your play to be, Zach, we're going to clear the floor for you, go win us the game, okay, fine. But really? Like, Fred can't come up with anything better than that? Because that's what they keep trying, and that keeps failing.
Well, to Fred Hoiberg's defense, he didn't call a timeout there because I don't know if you all right with him not taking timeout there, because the explanation that I think a few of the guys on Twitter last night gave, and I think they're good explanations, is the fact that the Spurs defense was drained. They were at 0%. And calling a timeout there gives the opportunity for the Spurs not only to check in their defensive only lineup, but it also gives them the chance to reset a little bit. And the ball's going to LaVine anyway, right? Even out of a timeout, the Bulls are going to LaVine for that last shot. There's no doubt about it. So not calling a timeout there and letting LaVine just run it, I'm fine with. And that's okay to me. Like, he wanted to make the play, so make the play as a big-time player. And he didn't do that last night. I'm caught up with the fact that I thought he was a smarter player than to take that type of shot. And while you can learn from this, and this is going to be something LaVine's going to have to do this entire season, and he's learning early on that if he wants to be that guy, he's going to make smarter moves and take smarter shots than that. But I think it's a concern right now, but I'm willing to be patient about it with LaVine and whether or not he can be that clutch shooter. Matt, let me just run through some of these numbers really quick for you. So I had mentioned LaVine's shooting numbers from three in the month of November, 22.7%. Here's LaVine shooting in the fourth quarter this year. He's 45 of 109. That's 41.3%. He's 27.3% from three. He's shooting a combined 26% from three in the second half. And compared to his first half numbers, LaVine's almost shooting 40% in the first half from three. And then when the second half comes around, he's shooting under 30. So I got to look at that. And he's got to know his numbers too, right? He's got to know that he's not shooting the ball well from three this month. So you've got to attack the basket. To me, I don't know what he was trying to do. And I don't think we should disregard the fact that the Bulls were only down one. You didn't need a three-pointer there. So I don't know. I hope LaVine checks his tape here on that shot. And even though he thinks that it was a solid look, there's a better shot than that, and I think he should know that. He won a game single-handedly on driving to the basket as opposed to pulling back and taking a three. So
yeah, I mean, yes, there is this new trend in the NBA where three-point efficiency, now all of a sudden taking three-pointers is a more efficient shot than taking mid-range twos, obviously. But guess what? Looks at the basket, and free throws, still more efficient than three-pointers, regardless of what LaVine's percentage has been this month or in this game last night. And to your point about you being fine with the decision for Fred to not call a timeout and just let Zach go run that play for himself, yeah, okay, fine. It's not like Fred has a great resume of drawing up great plays coming out of timeouts. In fact, it's the opposite. And so my point of, you know, come on, Fred, come up with something better than that. It's not like I have a whole lot of faith in him to do so, but would I have been just as fine with Fred calling a timeout and trying to draw up a play for, instead of, clearly the defense is going to be focused, all eyes on Zach LaVine. Archie Diacono was 4 of 6 from downtown last night and a very effective 8 of 12 overall. Justin Holiday had another strong shooting night, 6 of 10, including 5 of 8 from downtown. I would have been fine with Archie or Holiday taking a last-second shot. You know, whether or not it's a, you know, a three-pointer or just getting them a good look somewhere, LaVine clearly has not been clutch when he has been asked to be clutch. And if the defense is going to put all their focus on him, if Fred comes up with any kind of play to find an open look for Holiday or Archie, there's a good chance that they get an open look and they knock it down the way that they were shooting the ball last night. That's the issue I have.
I just go back to that Detroit game. Remember, like, out of the timeout, Ish Smith knocks down that layup and then the Bulls come out of the timeout. LaVine fumbles it and that's the end of the game, and that's kind of the play that they run. I always go back to that. And there was another instance, I can't remember exactly which game it was, but there was another instance or two where that kind of happened, where the Bulls fumbled the ball, turned the ball over in the last 30 seconds.
It was a double overtime game against the Knicks, which they did end up winning, but there were, in the end of regulation and at the end of the first overtime, multiple chances for LaVine to win the game for the Bulls, and he lost the ball.
That Knicks game was wild. Like, 5 turnovers in a row by both teams, like back-to-back-to-back-to-back-to-back. But yeah, so I am fine with not taking the timeout, because think about it from the Spurs perspective too. You could have put your defensive lineup in there. You could have gave your guys a chance to take a break, and they decided not to do that. So I'm totally fine with that. Just goes back to the larger question about LaVine. Is he, and I'm willing to be patient about it too, Matt, and I don't know about you, willing to be patient enough to wait till Markkanen comes back and some of these other starters to really hone in on whether or not LaVine can be that number one guy, because you think about it, he's got really no other options on this team, and he's got to take that shot. But if you want to be that guy, you've got to take responsibility when you don't make those shots. So, and I think he was, in a sense. I'm still, like, drawing blanks on how you could come up with that shot being the one that makes you justified in saying we need to learn how to win, you know? And that's what I just keep going back to, is he's said multiple times this year, we need to learn how to win. Well, that's not really learning how to win when you take a shot like that. And I don't know what that says to your teammates, but I wouldn't be too happy about that selection if I was one of Zach LaVine's teammates last night.
Yeah, I mean, he had that comment after a loss over the weekend where he said, you know, sometimes I see us make a play or, you know, make a turnover or whatever, and I just shake my head and say, what the heck are we doing? Well, LaVine choosing to shoot that three last night was definitely a what the heck are you doing kind of decision. It was a bad choice. I know that this team is asking a lot of LaVine right now until we get some of these guys back. So you have to cut him a little bit of slack. The guy is physically and mentally exhausted. And more likely than not, he does give this team their best chance to win, putting the ball in his hands late. But last night, if the options you gave me were let LaVine just run out the clock, run a play for himself, and he takes that shot, or Fred calls a timeout and tries to draw up a play where LaVine is the decoy and you find an open look for Archie or Holiday, who were both shooting the ball well last night, yeah, I would have preferred the latter.
I want to jump into more about this game too. I've got a lot of other notes besides just the last shot, but I felt like we needed to start the top of the show off with that, because that's kind of where the game led up to, and that was the most important part. But before we get to that, Matt, you know, if you're here in the city of Chicago, been dumped on by some snow and some freezing cold, and I don't know how you're dealing with it, bundling in multiple layers. I haven't been the smartest, Matt, because I haven't been that prepared. I was trying to hold off with the snow. But there's a solution out there. It's called Action Heat. Action Heat makes the world's best battery-heated clothing. Yes, that's right, best battery-heated clothing. Heat on demand at the touch of a button. Control your environment with Action Heat. Action Heat clothing is engineered to safely and efficiently deliver heat via heat panels, similar to a heated car seat. They can reach temperatures of up to 135 degrees and are powered by rechargeable 5-volt lithium-ion batteries that last up to 12 hours on each charge. Action Heat batteries can also be used to recharge by your phone or any other gadget while you're wearing them. Perfect for any friends or family this holiday season. Between their socks, their gloves, their hats, their jackets, even their undergarments are all like heat-based layer clothing along with the heat panels. Action Heat is your number one stop to stay warm this winter. We've got a special offer with Action Heat. Our deal for our listeners is saving 20% off your entire order. Just go to actionheat.com/lockedon to check out everything Action Heat has to offer. That's actionheat.com/lockedon, or use the promo code LOCKEDON at checkout to save 20%. Stay toasty warm while you enjoy all your outdoor activities this winter with Action Heat. We thank them for being a sponsor of the podcast. Matt will be right back here on Locked On Bulls. Stay with us. Back here on Locked On Bulls, hit us up 331-979-1369. What did you think about Zach LaVine's shot last night? We'd love to hear your thoughts, whether you think it was a good decision, bad decision. What do you think of him overall in clutch time? You know, we talked early on in the season when he was dropping 30-plus points that his usage rates and his clutch time performances was one of the best in the league. That's kind of tapered off now that we've gotten another sizable sample size, about 10 games or so of LaVine struggling a little bit here in November. So we'd like to hear from you, 331-979-1369, voicemails and text messages there. Matt, staying with the fourth quarter. So you had mentioned it in your opening that the Bulls went about, I don't know, 5.5 minutes, the last 6 minutes of the game or so, by only draining points made by Ryan Arcidiacono. It came off of 2 threes that actually kept the Bulls in this game. I was fine with the sets that they were running late in the games, and shots just weren't falling. You know, LaVine, I think, was victimized, and he gets like 2 or 3 of those shots. Same thing with Wendell Carter Jr. Jabari Parker took 2 or 3 of those shots. I'm fine with all those shot selections, but keeps becoming a recurring theme here is that the Bulls in the fourth quarter all of a sudden go stretches of 4 to 6 minutes without finding the basket. So how do we eliminate that? How do we stop that from happening? What do the Bulls need to do better in order to do that? Or is it just simply like shots are just not going down for this team?
Yeah, I don't necessarily think it was a matter of lacking in execution last night. You know, like the Bulls actually only turned the ball over 11 times against the Spurs last night, which compared to their season average is not that bad. It wasn't like they were doing dumb things and turning the ball over. As you said, plenty of the main players on this team got good looks down the stretch in the fourth quarter, and they just missed shots. Some nights that'll happen. Unfortunately for this Bulls team, as undermanned and shorthanded as they are, there's not a whole lot of room for error if you're missing your good looks. And so to me, that is the key where this game went wrong last night. It stinks when you get good open looks and you can't make them, but you got to find a way to get stops on the other end. And the Bulls didn't do that. And that is why, outside of LaVine passing up a drive and potential layup or free throws, it's to instead take a long contested three. The other big issue I took from last night's game was Fred Hoiberg pulling Wendell Carter Jr. with about 3 minutes left. He had just picked up his fifth foul, and the Bulls were, I think it was like tie game, maybe the Bulls were up two or down two, I don't know, it was close, with 3 minutes left. And Fred Hoiberg, robot that he is just, oh, Wendell picked up a foul just now, better take him out, and he puts in Robin Lopez. Yes, Wendell had a tough night, not a great night offensively. He, as you mentioned, had missed like a close look inside on the offensive end. And, you know, he was getting bullied at times. But he still, on any given possession, is this team's best chance to get a block, to get a stop, to protect the rim, more so than Robin Lopez. Robin comes in for Wendell, and they immediately go to LaMarcus Aldridge, who goes right at and right by Robin Lopez, including an and-one dunk in which Robin Lopez looks like a freaking statue. All of a sudden, after subbing out Wendell at the 3-minute mark, it's the 2-minute mark, and the Bulls are down 7.
that was the game right there. That 1 minute stretch where Fred decided to take Wendell out with five fouls and put in Robin, and the Spurs went right at Rolo. To me, that is more egregious than Levine's decision to take a pull-up three. Like, Fred, what do you think when somebody gets another foul and you haven't taken them out for a while, you just have to take them out? What's the worst-case scenario? Leave Wendell in there to try and get a stop. And if he fouls out, he fouls out. But what the hell are you doing taking him out of that game? Because guess what? In the minute that you took Wendell out and Lopez was in there, the Spurs went at Rolo. And they won that game.
I have no excuse for it either, Matt. I am totally with you on that. I'm just looking back at the play-by-play log. Wendell checks out of the game at the three-minute marker. DeMar DeRozan proceeds to hit a shot. Zach LaVine comes down, misses a shot. Jabari gets the offensive rebound. Zach misses a shot. They get the defensive rebound. And then you had mentioned the LaMarcus Aldridge backing down for a dunk and one on Robin Lopez. And then quickly, you're down seven. And then Wendell checks back into the game. I was curious about that move, too, and I don't know if it was to give Wendell a break, a breather for a second, but he had only played 24 minutes in this game, so I don't know what it was, and I don't know, maybe it was a recollect yourself on the bench for a minute after missing a shot. He had missed two shots in that stretch and turned the ball over once, too, and that included a missed dunk at the rim, so I don't know if it was to take a breather, recollect yourself, let's go back out there, and it ended up not working in the Bulls' favor, like you had mentioned. The San Antonio Spurs had ended up going up seven. My thing was too, on top of all of that, the fact that Ryan Arcidiacono is the only guy to knock down shots late at the end, and this is probably the only time I'll say this all season long, but they went to Jabari a couple times. They went to Zach a couple times. Both missed. They went to Wendell a couple times. Justin Holiday was arguably your best shooter in this game outside of Ryan Arcidiacono. Why didn't you go to him? And so maybe it goes back to the fact that they wanted to get their guys their shots. But then at the end, like the last 6 minutes, I felt like it was Zach goes down, takes a shot. Okay, he misses. Now it's Jabari's turn to go in isolation and take a shot. And that just completely throws everything off that the Bulls are doing. And I notice it more and more times now in the fourth quarter that when the Bulls get down and Zach or Jabari are missing shots, they just take turns going isolation. And then more times than not, it doesn't work. So I don't understand that either.
I mean, I think a big part of it is the fact that, let's face it, Fred Hoiberg, not a great late game coach. I took issue with him taking out Wendell, and I think that that came back to bite him. But we've been talking about LaVine going ISO, trying to play hero ball, being the best option for this team right now. It seems like it's the best option because Fred doesn't have any other better ideas. At some point, it's on the players to knock down the shots. And we have said LaVine missed open looks late in the fourth quarter. Jabari missed open looks. Wendell had a couple of missed opportunities, you know, in the paint. And that, you know, that sucks. And it, you know, that's not on Fred. If a player gets a good look and he misses the shot, then that's just a player missing an open shot. But this is not the first time that the Bulls have struggled to execute down the stretch of a close game in the fourth quarter. This is an ongoing trend, and I'm sorry, a lot of that to me is arrows pointing to Fred Hoiberg, because the guy, and it, whether it's, you know, trying to draw plays coming out of timeouts in the first quarter, the second, the third, or the fourth, he's never really excelled at that. He's never really been great at making in-game adjustments based on what their opponents are giving them. To me, it's on the players to go make the buckets, but there's just such a lack of creativity, in my opinion, as far as what we're seeing from Fred, as ways to find ways for his, like, putting his players in the best positions possible to go win games late in close game situations. I just don't see it from Fred.
Just to round out the show, wanted to mention this too, that the Bulls last night, bench points, Spurs 44 points off the bench to the Bulls 14,
right? Yeah.
Yeah.
30 points deficit.
And obviously, like the most obvious excuse here is, well, yeah, three rotations players are out, bench players are actually starting, and you're kind of moving everybody down the line, so that kind of makes sense. Like, you look at the Bulls bench, Hutchinson, Lopez, Payne, Harrison, Blakeney, Felicio. Like, I don't expect any of those guys off the bench to score. And the only time you are getting bench scoring is when Antonio Blakeney comes in and has a heater. And that hasn't happened in the last, I don't know, 3 weeks. We haven't seen that.
Well, and as you noticed, so, like, they got Hutchinson back in the rotation after he missed a few games with the back spasms. And so you figured that would be the end of campaign.
But no, Fred leapfrogged Cam over Blakeney. And Cam played 9 minutes in this game to Blakeney's three. Blakeney didn't get in other than a very quick stint. And I mean, I don't know about you, Jor. I couldn't believe it. Like, I know Blakeney has had a string of bad games recently, like you just said. But playing Cam over him, Cam was a minus 14 in 9 minutes. He had an air ball. He was doing Cam things out there that you said, why the heck is this guy still getting minutes? I thought for sure when Hutch got back in the rotation, that would be the end of Cam. But apparently, as Fred has decided that Archie's minutes, that Blakeney's minutes, rather, have been so bad recently that he would rather play Cam Payne than Antonio Blakeney, which to me, that's just like, oh, dear God. Like, look at the options he has.
I think it's kind of funny. Like, he's using Cameron Payne and Antonio Blakeney, just flip-flopping those two. Whoever's in timeout doesn't get to play the minutes that night. And that's kind of what he's doing with both of those guys. And it's out of necessity, too. But the other two that we should mention while we're talking about this point guard rotation, I think is crazy. Ryan Arcidiacono had a hell of a night last night. A hell of a night.
Career high 22.
Here's Arcidiacono. Arcidiacono with that one from the Bulls. San Antonio. If they don't get it in, Arcidiacono stole it. Good hustle.
It's crazy, man. Like, every time we talk about him having a good night or all of a sudden being good, we always, like, I personally sit here and think, well, let me not get my hopes up because maybe this is just a flash in the pan. And then all of a sudden he continues to make the Bulls look good and make himself look good. 22 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 steals, was 4 for 6 from 3. And he was a plus 7 in the plus minus. So I don't know. Like, when Chris Dunn comes back, man, I think Ryan Arcidiacono is your surefire backup point guard. And I think Shaq Harrison has done enough to make himself at least be able to be your reserve guard. And then I don't see how Antonio Blakeney, maybe he does in the two role, but Antonio Blakeney and Cameron Payne are going to be sitting there fighting for minutes even more so than they are right now. But props to Ryan Arcidiacono, man. He has proven me wrong, my predictions for what his season was going to look like. And I think a lot of the fans out there who didn't think he was worthy of that guaranteed contract, that last 15th spot, and he's proved to pay dividends, yeah, at least for the Bulls right now in shorthanded.
Yeah, I mean, I was not a believer in Archie when we were talking about this roster and the rotation coming into training camp. Not at all. I thought it was just kind of a bland, blah player who, you know, is his ceiling is about the same height as his floor. But apparently for Fred's rotation, that's been a good thing because Archie has been consistent. All season long, he's not going to light up the, you know, the score sheet every night, but he's going to be a smart basketball player on the offensive end. He's going to limit his turnovers. He's going to find looks for his teammates. He's becoming more and more of a real threat behind the three-point line, and he gives you effort and intensity and smart basketball on the defensive end. That one steal where he just picked DeRozan's pocket last night for an easy two on the other, it was beautiful, beautiful defense. And, you know, I think to that end, you mentioned him, you know, Shaq Harrison, probably because of his defensive acumen, will probably be the backup point guard going forward once Dunn comes back, and it's Archie's backup spot for sure. If Shaq Harrison can ever, for fuck's sake, knock down a shot, he's clearly a better option than Blakeney and Campaign both. But Shaq Harrison has really struggled shooting recently, and he's really just a one-way player right now defensively. But hey, you look at the box score, Shaq Harrison did have 5 assists last night, and guess what? 0 turnovers. That's the same kind of stuff that Fred likes to see from Arcidiacono.
So glad you brought up Shaq Harrison. If he could just knock down a damn shot, man. Like, this guy, like, we talk about scrap heap, but like, active hands on the defensive side, and like, literally every game he's played in so far, he's had at least 2 steals where he's run it for a fast break. And he did that same thing last night for Jabari Parker. It was nice enough to kick it back to Jabari for an easy dunk on a fast break. But yeah, you talk about the steals. He had 1 steal, and that was the one I talked about last night. But he had 2 blocks, 4 rebounds, 5 assists. Like, if he could just figure it out, maybe even from the 3-point line, he was 0 for 3 from there last night. But if he can just knock down any shots, man, like, I think he's got an opportunity to stay in that lineup. Aggressive, like you said, aggressive as hell on defense. And watching him go one-on-one with DeMar DeRozan, even in short stints last night, I think was a lot of fun. And it should build up the confidence for Fred Hoiberg to at least say, all right, we're going to continue to give him a shot. And maybe this quote-unquote shot doctor that we have as a coach can figure something out with Shaq Harrison's shot, get him to start knocking down shots. The other thing that I thought was funny too, Matt, and maybe this is just me stretching it, but Ryan Arcidiacono becoming a Fred Jr. in a sense in his playing style, like going back to looking at Fred's NBA days, it looks like Ryan Arcidiacono is like a reincarnation of Fred Hoiberg back from like the late 90s, early 2000s.
I mean, I would prefer to say he is the second coming of Kirk Heinrich, but that's just me.
I would too.
Because let's be real, Kirk Heinrich, far superior NBA player than Fred ever was.
That's very true. Very, very true. All right, last thing is we're wrapping up here, Matt. Jabari Parker, 18 points, 10 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 steals, plus 1 in the plus minus, 7 for 15 from the field, 2 for 6 from the 3, 2 for 3 from the free throw line. This is 4 games in a row now Jabari Parker's stacked together and has actually played pretty decently. What are your thoughts as far as the last week and a half of Jabari Parker's game?
I mean, better than what we saw to begin the season. I will give him credit where it's due. He has looked better. He has taken fewer ill-advised shots, although he did have a handful more of those long twos that he loved so much last night, but there are fewer of them. He is actually starting to show evidence of occasionally giving a damn or pretending to give a damn on the defensive end. He still gets caught with his hand in the cookie jar as far as defensive possessions where he's just standing like a stone statue, just flat-footed. Doesn't help, doesn't communicate, doesn't have his man, doesn't keep an eye on who he should be keeping an eye on. But like on the offensive end, at least he's carrying his weight there, and he's looked like a guy who is maybe fitting in a little bit better, because when this season started, Jabari with the rest of the Bulls offense was like oil and water, man. It just looked so disjointed and ugly. And there are still moments when you see that, but at least he started to show signs of a guy who can be not just a guy who's going to go down and get his looks throughout the game, regardless of what the rest of the offense is trying to do, but a guy who's actually trying to play within Fred's system. When Fred's system is actually trying to be executed out there from the other four guys on the floor. So hopefully he keeps this up. But, you know, by no means am I changing my stance on my overall stance on how I feel about Jabari and him being signed to this team.
Man, if he could just stop with the Cameron Payne-like turnovers in games where, you know, I feel like it happens at least once a game where he comes down with the ball, gets too crazy with the dribbling and just... it's a nonsense turnover. Like he has butterfingers all of a sudden, and that's been not something just Jabari Parker's been doing, but it's Zach LaVine and Wendell Carter Jr. has the case of the butterfingers lately. The last thing I want to close the show out with, though, Matt, ESPN's defensive RPM player update. You know, we had mentioned the RPM last week, and ESPN does this every single week. They'll update their RPM. Since Jabari Parker was considered the worst in RPM in the entire league out of 430 players, since then, out of 434 players to qualify, defensive RPM, Blakeney 431st, LaVine 429th, Parker up to 381st, so he hurt us a little bit.
They don't pay players to play defense. You know, I'm not going to say that I won't, but to say that's a weakness is like saying that's everybody's weakness, because I've scored 30s and 20s on a lot of guys who say they play defense. So
Payne, 353rd, Holiday, 251st, Ryan Arcidiacono, 222nd, and then Wendell Carter Jr. in the top 50 at 45th. So good to see Wendell Carter Jr. RPM at 45th, but everybody else back in the bottom fourth of the league in defense, and that should come as no surprise. But
I was going to say, we all knew coming into this season that this Bulls defense was going to be gumshoe levels of god-awful.
At least Carter's in the top 50. So as bad as he has been on the offensive side, Matt, that's something we can talk about tomorrow, more on tomorrow's show, because I hate to say it, but you might be right about Wendell Carter Jr. struggling. But I want to get into more of that on tomorrow's show. That's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Our text and voicemail lines at 331-979-1369. Hit us up there with all your voicemails, your text, your questions. We want to hear from you. Any want to jump into the discussion, anything we've been talking about today or yesterday, we'd love to hear from you. 331-979-1369. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com.